Welcome inside the Fantasy Sports Network studios. This is Fantasy Sports Today. I'm Chris Meany. This is Pat Mayo. You know him. We're going to talk some PGA golf. Mike Florio is in a little bit. We're going to continue Roto Experts Week as we talk some fantasy baseball leading up to draft. And we'll get to the Kevin Love news. He's sidelined for 6 weeks. Plus, Serge Ibaka. Toronto Raptor, Terrence Ross.
Raptors!
Wow, Raptors making moves. I mean, that's a pretty good move.
If you like the Raptors.
If you like the Raptors, it's a pretty good move. If you're a Ibaka owner, it may not be. We'll talk about that in a little bit, but Pat is here to talk some golf. Pat, you're already a Pat Mayo Hour. You and Cam Stewart broke it down all day yesterday. We only have a few minutes to get into all that, but I want to know your strategy here. Genesis Open, you know, this course particularly, I always look at it as like long bombers, but we have some issues here with weather. So, like, what stats are you looking at?
I actually think that the weather should help the bombers. Now, that might not always be the case, because if you get off the fairway a little bit and that rough is going to be growing out a little bit more than it was, you know, let's say this time last year when Bubba couldn't hit a fairway, didn't matter, he won at 15 under. Expect the scoring to be higher, and not higher as in minus 20, higher as in like minus 5, minus 6. It's golf, you can everything
yeah.
in reverse. But I'm still going to go with the bombers just in case, because this course plays a lot longer than people think. It's just over 7,300 yards. However, there's a par 5 that's a shade over 500 yards. There's a par 4, it's only 315. You take those out.
That's the 10th hole, right?
That's the 10th hole is great.
One of the best holes in golf.
And it's the one that is the case for golf analytics, but you can read my column for that. However, once you take those two out, it's a lot of longer par 4s. 6 of the 11 par 4s this week play over 450 yards. So you do need that distance. And if it is soggy and it is wet, and you're not going to get that roll on the fairway like a lot of guys like, you're going to need to carry it in the air. So I say big advantage bombers. And if you're looking at corollary courses and looking at leaderboards, look at Augusta, look at Quail Hollow, and look at Torrey Pines.
Yeah. Well, you just saw, I mean, you mentioned Bubba. We just saw the board there, defending champ.
He might be hurt.
Big bomber.
He might be
bombers.
Hurt.
Yeah, so let's talk about him a little bit, because he's, you know, struggled to hit in the fairway last year, struggling this year to get in the fairway. You say he might be hurt. Is this like a contrarian play that you would consider in tournament plays, or are you just altogether avoiding this guy? This is an elite field, Pat.
Yeah, I mean, it's great.
8 of the top 10 golfers in the world are here. Rory would be here. He's hurt. Seneca, a good showing last week. So, I mean, are you going to take that shot on some of these big bombers?
Not Bubba. I'm going complete fade, because the more you talk about guys, like, let's say you and I, we're talking about, oh, well, Bubba's hurt. He's not in great form. I don't care that he's the defending champion.
Yeah.
When you get into the actual large field tournaments on DraftKings, you have your very casual players like, oh, Bubba Watson won last year. I'm going to play him. Oh, he's won twice in the past 3 years?
Yeah,
let's get him in your lineup. So he's not going to be as under-owned as a lot of people think. That's why I'm going pure fade. If I thought everyone was going to fade him, I'd take a shot or two. It's not going to be the case, though.
Yeah, defending champ, 6 cuts made, top 20 in all of those 6 cuts. Let's talk about Dustin Johnson.
Yeah.
Dustin Johnson's the guy we want to talk about here. I mean, his game is really not even all together, but
it's close.
It's very, very close is what I was going to say. I mean, 5 top 4s here since 2010. Big bomber. All the tools. Check, check, check.
Everything you want. The great course history. He did miss the cut 4 years ago. That's his only blemish on his resume at Riviera. But like Chris mentioned, he has three top fours in the past 3 years, including 2 runner-ups in that time. He has 7 top tens in 9 career starts. He's playing really well right now. And maybe the clincher for me, despite the fact that the course history really checks out, and a good showing at Torrey Pines over the years as well, another corollary course, and a great showing at Augusta last year. I think people forget that. With a win, he could be number 1 in the world.
Yeah.
And he's never reached that before, and it's hard to project narrative, because Hideki's the same way. With a win, Hideki could be number 1 as well, as long as Jason Day doesn't come in second place. But I think if you're looking for stone cold lock, cash game, Dustin Johnson's probably going to be the highest owned guy in GPPs. I don't care. I'm just going to go overweight. You're looking at like 40%, 45% ownership. Just put him on 70% of your teams and figure out the rest later, because the pricing is so soft that you can afford him and someone else at the top. You want to go Dustin Day, Dustin Scott, Dustin Sergio, Dustin Justin Thomas, Dustin Hideki, you can do all of that.
What do you make of the pricing? I mean, there's been a lot of complaints over the past couple weeks.
People just like to complain.
We know that.
Some of it's stupid.
We hear some of the complaints, and a lot of them are actually probably stupid. But what do you make of some of this pricing? Because what I've noticed really is, and I know it's only early into the season, but not a lot of these low-end golfers, you know, you and Feinberger hitting last year on all these low-end guys, but so far this year, it's been a lot of, you know, Justin Thomas,
Chalk.
Jordan Spieth last week. I mean, are you looking at Spieth again as somebody you're going to want to have in a majority of your lineups? Because you did mention a lot of variations. You can get some top dogs in here and some low-key guys.
Yeah, you can go Spieth, Dustin, if you want. I'm actually going to be off the Spieth train this week. I think he's going to be over-owned, and when you look at his history at this course, he has a 4th, he has a 15th, and he has 2 missed cuts.
Yeah.
He's coming off the win, so obviously he's playing playing well, and he's someone that parlays good play into more good play. We've seen that over the years. A win followed by a win, followed by a second, followed by a second. That's what Jordan Spieth does. Yeah. And someone even pointed out to me that the reason that he plays so well at the Masters all the time is because he hits such a nice fade. And he actually plays such a nice draw. That's my bad when I say that. And there's a lot of dogleg lefts at Riviera. So Jordan Spieth is set up well enough for this course, but he is 71st in driving distance. So there's enough checks against him this week as opposed to guys like Dustin, like Adam Scott, like Justin Thomas or Hideki that I think out of all these guys in the top tier, he's the one I'm going to avoid.
What about Sergio Garcia? Last year, he disappointed
people. Everyone's going to be on.
Everyone's going to go back to him. Last year, I believe he was a one and done for me at this tournament.
Missed the cut.
And everyone was a little bit surprised at that situation. Are you just avoiding him because you feel like altogether a lot of people are going to own him? Or do you think that there's enough here with the course history to play him?
No, I think if you play a balanced lineup, Sergio is a great way to start your lineup. Even Justin Thomas, Sergio at the beginning of these lineups, because just not a lot of people are going to have that. I am going to have exposure to Sergio, not a ton. Just like Paul Casey right below. I'm going to have some Paul Casey. I'll have more Justin Rose than both of those guys, just because I think that Justin Rose falls through the cracks a little bit, just because that price range, that like 8,500 to 7,500, I mean, that's where these overpriced, mispriced guys are all sitting right now, and just no one wants to touch them, because you can afford all the top-end guys and all the lower-end guys, because everyone in the field is going to own some combination of Brooks Koepka, J.B. Holmes, and Brendan Steele at $7,100.
Yeah.
They're egregiously mispriced, just like Jim Furyk at $6,600. Like, there's no reason for it.
That jumped out to me big time when I was looking at the prices. Like, Furyk does pretty good here. Adam Scott does pretty good here.
Love Adam Scott this week.
T2 last year here, and worldwide, he's been unbelievable so far this season.
The big knock against Scott right now is that he just hasn't been playing all that much. He's only played once in 2017. He had a T9 a month ago in Singapore.
Yeah.
Not the strongest field going around in Singapore. So people are worried about the rust. I'm not. Adam Scott dominates this course. When you look at the key stats, whether it be driving distance, strokes gained approach, proximity from outside 200 yards, Adam Scott ranks first in all of these.
That's what I love. That's what I noticed about Scott. I mean, sometimes the putting can let you down, but I mean, just the approach to the green and just setting
every
up
time.
That putting, it's just a lock. And you're right. He hasn't played a lot, but no worse than T14 in his last five starts worldwide. So, I mean, there may be some rust there, but when he does play, he's consistently fine.
I'm hoping it keeps people off of him, to be perfectly honest. Like, if you took salary out of the equation and you had to power rank these guys, Dustin's number one for me, Adam Scott's number two, and then it's the mix of the other guys. Like, I'd probably put Spieth last because, you know, I fade Spieth because I'm an idiot. People probably shouldn't be fading Spieth all the time like I do, but sometimes it blows up in your face. After that, like, Hideki and Day are really close. Justin Thomas has more of the skill set that I want here than Jordan Spieth has, so yeah, I'd put even him over Jordan Spieth this week. But Dustin, Scott are my 1-2, and then when you start dropping down the list, Phil's a two-time winner here. He's only $7,900.
Well, that's what before we get you out of here, I wanted to bring up Phil because first time here since 2013, the event's all-time money leader here. But what we've seen from him so far is
sucks on Sunday.
Yeah, he can't close. He's not closing. What's going on there? It's just in his head. It's just
hernia surgery. This is the fifth week in a row that he's played. Like, he's 46 years old. He's not in the greatest shape. You know, maybe the guy could use a bro. I don't know. That's just my opinion on the matter. I will be going with Phil a little bit, but guys that I really do like that we didn't bring up before we get out of here, Charles Schwartzel, $8,300 or $8,200, $8,100.
Even
more savings. And Brendan Grace is $7,300. The grass at Riviera is Kikuyu grass, the same grass they play with in South Africa. So if it does get damp and it does get thick to get out of, these guys are going to know. Other than that, play Patrick Rogers.
What about a one and done pick before you get out of here?
It's going to be Paul Casey.
It's going to be Paul Casey?
Dustin, Paul Casey. Like, I've been so bad at one and done that I need someone to win me money this week.
Yeah.
Casey and Dustin will probably be the two highest. I might pivot to Scott. Maybe Justin Thomas, because a lot of people have used him already. Phil is going to be very popular, but a lot of people have used Phil.
If you need a win,
Dustin.
That's what I was going to go. Yeah. I mean, I missed two straight cuts. Last week I had Snedeker. I want to keep it rolling. I want to just go with the guys and Dustin Johnson.
You can't think about it in those terms. It's still too early in the season to start getting away from a game plan. I think the best game plan in one and done leagues always is, like, I took Sean O'Hare last week because I'm an idiot and break my own rules. But you shouldn't be taking guys that far down the list. I get the appeal that you want to be the only guy who has them. The better way to do it is identify the top 10 guys in DraftKings pricing or odds or whatever it is and just take the guy no one else is going to take. They're still awesome players. players. You mentioned 8 of the top 10 in the world are here. 15 of the top 25. Yeah. 25 of the top 50. This is a great field. If you want to take a gamble on Thomas Peters, I don't blame you.
It's an elite field. Pat, thank you so much. You want more golf coverage? Follow him on Twitter. You probably already do, but check out all of his work. It's all over the place. iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Fantasy Sports Network, YouTube, Fantasy Sports Network, the channel.
Topic-wise, too, we got some Bachelor and Challenge coming at you along with Fantasy Baseball Ranks.
Fantasy Baseball Ranks and the Challenge. Good stuff right there. Okay, when we get back here, Roto Experts Week will continue. Talking to Michael Florio, and this is all about Roto League, so stick around. You're watching Fantasy Sports Today live right here on Fantasy Sports Network. Chris Meany here with you. Thanks for taking the time to stick around with me. Roto Experts Week. We kicked it off yesterday with Scott Engel. Today, we're going to bring in Michael Florio, of course, from Roto Experts, doing all kinds of writing on the website. The Fantasy Baseball Draft Guide launches tomorrow. Michael, you've done a lot of writing so far, so we appreciate your time to come here and talk about this. And all kinds of articles that you've written will drop tomorrow. But I want to talk to you about Roto Leagues. It's always about head-to-head. Sometimes we forget about the strategy and how it changes from points league. So in your opinion, how does it change? I mean, do pitchers get a bigger boost? Do you tend to draft them a little bit earlier as opposed to head-to-head leagues? What's your take on rotisserie leagues?
Well, in points leagues, I think that pitchers get the biggest bump because they usually, in standard points leagues, get a point for every out. They get an extra half a point for strikeouts. Then, you know, they get the bonuses for wins and quality starts. And if you look at it, every year, the guys at the top, like in 2015, 18 of the top 20 pitchers had gone over 200 innings. Last year, 18 of the top 20 starters went 190 innings. So that's kind of the threshold you got to shoot for. The only exceptions this past year were elite talent in Clayton Kershaw and Noah Syndergaard. So you really need these pitchers who are going to eat innings if you want to compete. And I think in Roto, you know, you could usually wait a little bit. I still like to attack pitching early in Roto leagues, but in head-to-head, it's a must. My strategy is to get two of the top like 15 starting pitchers in the first 4 to 5 rounds. They usually go earlier in head-to-head leagues anyway because they're always going to be atop the scoring leaders. So I usually spend like a third and a fourth, or if you get lucky, maybe a third and a fifth or a fourth and a fifth round pick on a starting pitcher. And then I like to wait a little bit and attack hitting and upload the rest of my staff and my entire bench usually with just young upside arms that I could stream week to week, get some double start guys in there who are going to rack up more points on a given week than a guy who has one start. And that's really how I attack the pitching position.
Yeah, well, what about David Price as an example of somebody who has just racked up about 200 innings, you know, for numerous years now in a row? Is that somebody who you're going to target, or do you feel like eventually, you know, the wheels are going to come off from this guy because he's pitched a lot of innings lately?
No, he is someone who is more valuable in a head-to-head league because, as you can see on the screen right now, he threw 230 innings last year. Hmm. Over the past 3 years, he's averaging just over 230 innings, by far the most in the league. He's the only pitcher. He averages the most over the past 3 years. So he had a down year last year, but he still finished as a top 10 pitcher in points leagues just because of the amount of innings he's going to go. And you are going to be able to get him pretty similar to what his price in a Roto League is, which is, you know, going in between, I would say, like the 10th to 15th starting pitcher off the board. Meanwhile, you're going to get a little bit of a discount there on a top 10 arm in points leagues just because he goes all those innings. And if he bounces back like some are projecting, you know, you're going to get a really good value there.
You know, Michael, you just kind of, earlier you mentioned relievers. I want to stick with pitchers before we get into hitters. I want to know your take and your strategy on relievers because you mentioned, you know, streaming a pitcher once a week, depending on the matchup. What about a reliever that not necessarily is going to get you the saves? I know we can bring up Miller and Betances, but what about a Hector Neris, somebody near the end of drafts who are maybe pitch 5 innings a week and rack up 7, 8, 10 Ks, maybe not get you the win, but sometimes that's better than just an average pitcher who's going to roll out once a week.
See, that in points leagues, though, this is where the biggest difference to me comes in from Roto, because in Roto, you usually get, on average, I would say 9 spots, and, you know, you could throw out any combination of starters and relievers. In a standard head-to-head league, you only start 2 relief pitchers. And those setup men, like you said, who in a Roto League will help your ratios and provide Ks, aren't nearly as valuable in points leagues because saves are really what drives the relief position. They're anywhere from 5 to 7 points depending on your league. So you really do need closers. But the thing with that being said every team starts two relief pitchers, like we said, plus a lot of leagues have starting pitchers that have relief pitcher eligibility. So you're really, in a 12-team league, no one's going to really, unusually at least, draft a bench reliever. So there is going to be, say, an opportunity to get a relief pitcher late because you're only starting 24, opposed to in a roto league where you're trying to pile up those saves because it's a very viable category.
I think that's where a lot of people do get in trouble with the different head-to-head formats and then roto and points leagues. All right, let's talk about some bats. Let's talk about the catcher position. Is there somebody that, you know, has more value in a points league as opposed to head-to-head, somebody that you're targeting?
Yeah, I mean, it may sound like a little bit of a cop-out, but it's Buster Posey. So what I like to do is I look for hitters who hit 30 or more doubles, strike out under 15% of the time, and walk over 10% of the time. And the reason I like to use those thresholds because you get 2 points for a double, you get an extra point for a walk, and you lose usually a negative half a point for strikeouts. And I think there is something I've kind of called like a roto bias where people look at the categories even when they play points leagues and they look at the standard 5x5 roto categories and they don't factor in a guy who's going to hit a lot of doubles and walk a lot and not strike out as much. And points leagues are where Posey really thrives because of that. Last year he had 37 more points scored than Jonathan Lucroy in a standard points league. And Wilson Ramoson was the only other catcher to come within 80 points of him. So you could draft Posey in the fourth round or so and give yourself a huge advantage at the catcher position.
You know, Michael, a player that I've noticed is going pretty late and underrated is Carlos Santana. I mean, it hit near the top of that Cleveland lineup. It's still going to be a powerful lineup with the acquisition of Edwin Encarnacion. What's your take on him? I've noticed lately he's just been going late in drafts, and I think he's returning terrific value.
I love Carlos Santana. I say whenever I get the chance, if you could mold any player to be a points league hitter, it would be Carlos Santana. The guy, he gets driven down, I believe, because of his average, but you don't really care about that as much in a head-to-head league because you care more about OBP. This guy is going to walk a ton. He gets on base a lot. He doesn't strike out as much. He can give you 25-plus homers. He's going to give you over 30 doubles. He's going to score a ton of runs, hitting leadoff for the Indians. And even though his RBIs may drop a bit, he's so consistent at driving in runs, and he's in a pretty deep lineup. I don't really worry too much about him. I love Carlos Santana, and I'm perfectly fine waiting on the first base position and drafting him pretty as a low-end first baseman one, even though he is going to return more value.
I agree. I love him as well. We want to know who else you love, man. Who else are you targeting?
So looking, I started looking at this the past few years, you know, the 30 home runs, strikeout over under 15% of the time, a walk over 10%. And two guys who are not exciting at all, but both years I've done this have jumped out are Ben Zobrist and Nick Markakis. Zobrist has, you know, all that versatility, and he's a guy you could plug in at second base or in the outfield. And he is going to give you value because he's definitely going to outlive his ADP. He's one of those guys who kind of gets driven down because he's boring. But like I said, man, he's going to hit you a ton of doubles. He's going to score runs. He's going to walk a lot. He's not going to strike out. And Nick Markakis isn't a guy that, you know, anyone is really going to go out and target. But the last 2 years, he's finished as a top 35 outfielder in points leagues. What I say about Markakis is you don't want to draft him as your starter, and you don't have to. But you'll never, if your starting outfielder gets hurt or whatever, you'll never feel bad plugging him in because you're going to get, you know, about 15 points on average each week. And he's one of the most consistent players in all of fantasy in points leagues. So while he's not exciting, he is a guy you could draft on your bench and not feel bad if you ever got to plug him in.
It's funny you bring up that about exciting. It's part of it, I guess, is the team that he plays for. I mean, a couple years ago when Keuchel and McHugh came onto the scene, nobody wanted them because they were Astros. They turned out to be fine. Last year with all the Philadelphia Phillies starting rotation, they were fine as well. Michael, one more guy before we get you out of here. Let's talk about Cole Calhoun. I want to know your take on him. A little bit of a down year last year, but I think he can be better. What's your take? Are you drafting this guy?
Yeah, I am. He's another one of those guys who's more valuable in points than Roto. Like, he hit 35 doubles last year. His walk rate was over 10%. He struck out only 17.6% of the time, which is a little bit over the 15% threshold I use, but still well below league average. And he only hit 18 homers. And I think that in Roto, people are going to see that, and they're going to want to, you know, go a different direction. But this guy in points leagues last year finishes the 21st outfielder, and just 2 years ago we saw him hit 26 homers. So he could have an uptick in power. As long as he keeps hitting doubles and walking and not striking out a ton, he is going to outlive his ADP in points leagues.
Yeah, you're right. He's not getting drafted as the 23rd outfielder currently right now. Michael, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much, and I encourage everybody to check out your work at rotoexperts.com. Have a good one, man.
Thanks for having me. You too.
Hey, no problem. Michael Florio right there. Give him a follow on Twitter. Again, The Roto Experts Fantasy Baseball Draft Guide will launch tomorrow. We're going to talk to Jake Seeley tomorrow. He was involved in the Labor Mix draft. We'll talk about his draft and more fantasy baseball all the way up until first pitch. It's getting close. We'll talk some basketball here next, though. Ibaka, shot blocker. He's a Raptor. What does it mean? Find out next. Welcome back inside the Fantasy Sports Network studios. This is FST. I am Chris Meany. Some big basketball news broke here before we started. I know we talked with Pat Mayo about some golf, so let's get into some of this news. Serge Ibaka, we all knew that he was going to get dealt. Well, he was traded to the Toronto Raptors this morning for Terrence Ross and a 2017 first round pick. Now, this is a great move, I think, for the Toronto Raptors, a rim protector, and he's changed his game over the last couple years. He can hit the three, but really just having a career year in some statistics. Usage rate 21, career high field goal attempts 12.6. Now I expect those numbers to kind of decrease a little bit with DeRozan and Lowry around. I don't expect them to shoot at least 12 shots a game, but just keep an eye on that situation. What does it mean for Terrence Ross and the Orlando Magic? Can Terrence Ross have a starting role here? Will Aaron Gordon move to power forward? Will Jeff Green small forward? I'm sure Vucevic's numbers will increase a little bit. Bismack Biyombo, will he get more playing time? Just keep an eye on Orlando's situation, but I think the biggest beneficiary here is Aaron Gordon. 28 points in the last time Orlando played without Ibaka, so keep an eye on that situation. And continuing with good news for the Raptors, Kevin Love, he's going to miss 6 weeks. He will have a scope done on his knee. At least 6 weeks is the timetable that I read this morning, so that's not great news. What does it mean for Cleveland now? Who's going to be able to step up? Channing Frye? Let's be honest here. It's not going to be Channing Frye that you're going to want to go to the waiver wire and pick up, but maybe it's Kyle Korver. Korver's been hot and cold since his trade to Cleveland, but I think he's going to have to step up his game. Are you going to play more LeBron James and Kyrie Irving in DFS? Probably. LeBron James now not going to be able to take any nights off. Certainly not. But yeah, Kevin Love. I mean, that's not great news. I mean, this guy was rumored to get traded, but you know what? For 6 weeks, Cleveland Cavaliers, they're going to be fine. They're going to make the playoffs. They'll be all right. Sticking with basketball news, Nuggets, they tied an NBA record last night for threes, 24 three-pointers, and of course, they did it against the perfect team in the Golden State Warriors, a 132-110 win yesterday. Nikolai Jokic, the Joker, he's got two triple-doubles in the last 11 days. He had never had any before. He had the triple-double yesterday. There's actually three players in the NBA since January 1st, averaging at least 20 points, 5 assists, and 10 rebounds. Westbrook, Cousins, and Jokic. Jameer Nelson went as far as saying he's played with a lot of great centers in his life. Dwight Howard, Dirk Nowitzki. None like Jokic. Let's settle down a little bit. But this guy is a terrific passer. He's an unbelievable playmaker. So Denver, I mean, they're rolling right now. This could be a potential first-round matchup, and I'm sure that will be in the back of the minds in Golden State, definitely. And we saw that trade. Nurkic traded to Portland for Mason Plumlee. Nurkic has been pretty disappointing this season, but for people who own Nurkic and own Jokic, they wanted to see this trade happen. They really wanted these guys to go separate ways so we could see what Jokic was all about, and we've seen it. Now let's see what Nurkic is all about, because given the opportunity, at some times he's been okay. This year, abysmal. He hasn't been all that good at all, but last year and the year before, just at times he's been okay. So keep an eye on this situation. Maybe he becomes a DFS play. Not somebody that you need to go to the waiver wire and add right now. And just switching over to hockey, Gustav Nyquist, he canceled his right to have an in-person hearing. He's going to do it over the phone, and it's expected to happen tomorrow. We all know what happened. He speared Jared Spurgeon in the face over the weekend. So at least 6 games is what he's going to get. Could even get 15, could get 20, could get 25. It's not a great situation. If you own him in fantasy hockey, you just go and cut your ties. And finally, Evgeny Malkin dealing with a knee injury is a game-time decision tonight against the Vancouver Canucks. And they're just dealing with a lot of injuries in Pittsburgh, but they're just keep on rolling. I'm out of here. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a good one.